Media presents Class of 79.
Any response yet?
No, absolutely nothing. Except the same transmission every 12 seconds. All the other channels are dead. Kick in the floods.
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 79 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turn 40 this year. I'm Natasha Pacetta, your host and vanguard of The Vault over here at Fangoria, and this is our series on Alien. If you missed the interviews with Academy Award winners Roger Christian and Nick Alder, go back and listen. Nick and Roger share incredible memories from their time working on Alien. And today, author J.W. Rinzler joins me to talk about his new book, The Making of Alien, and to share some of his favorite stories and experiences from creating this amazing book. Before we get to JW, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. In 1979, the first issue of Fangoria was released into the world. It's been 40 years and Fangoria is better than ever, each issue bringing you 100 pages of exclusive, carefully curated content honoring horrors past, present, and future. These articles and interviews will never be published online, ever, so the only way to read them is by getting your hands on a physical collectible copy of your own. Now, we can't give away what's inside the magazine because we want the experience to be a surprise, but we can safely say you will not want to miss a single page. Head on over to Fangoria.com to learn more and to subscribe. And while you're there, make sure you enter my promo code, CLASSOF, to save 15% off your subscription. That's Fangoria.com, promo code CLASSOF. And I'm excited to tell you about Satanic Panic. Sacrifices must be made. Fangoria's newest movie, Satanic Panic, starring Rebecca Romijn and Jerry O'Connell, is available on VOD now. Sam, a pizza delivery girl at the end of her financial rope, has to fight for her life and her tips when her last order of the night turns out to be high society Satanists in need of a virgin sacrifice. Directed by Chelsea Stardust and written by Grady Hendrix, Birth Movies Death calls Satanic Panic an absolutely entertaining horror film that will satisfy any viewer's need for monsters and mayhem. Satanic Panic is available now on VOD. And I want to tell you about our Alien series sponsor, Titan Books. Titan Books has just released The Making of Alien by J.W. Rinzler. To celebrate the movie's 40th anniversary, author J.W. Rinzler tells the fascinating story of how Alien evolved from a simple idea in the mind of writer Dan O'Bannon into one of the most memorable sci-fi horror thrillers of all time. With brand new interviews with Ridley Scott and other key members of the original production crew, The Making of Alien is the definitive work on this masterpiece of popular cinema. The book is available now at bookstores and online retailers everywhere. Now let's get to the author of that book, JW. So The Making of Alien is out now, and you are also the author of tomes such as The Making of Star Wars, The Making of Planet of the Apes, an upcoming book on The Shining, which I'm so excited for, and Rick Baker's massive two-volume Metamorphosis coming in October, which all the Fangoria fans out there cannot wait to get their hands on it. You can pre-order it right now on Amazon. It's amazing looking. I can't wait to dive into that. But you do these massive, beautiful books. How do you even start to tackle these things? What's your process like?
You know, it's a process that evolved over time. I didn't know how to do it at first. The first book I wrote on the making of episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, that was more of a fly on the wall thing. So it was a different process. And then starting with the first making a Star Wars book, it slowly evolved into kind of a process where I do a lot of research at first and go through, like you noticed, the Starlog magazines and old interviews.
Yes.
And as much information as I can get and production reports and memos. And I kind of try and set up the chronology of everything. You know, stories start to present themselves when you realize what actually happened and in what order it happened. Then do the interviews and kind of do a rough draft. And, you know, it just sort of evolves from there.
There's so much information that you package together, you know, so beautifully. And, you know, as we'll get into with The Making of Alien, like there's so many things I didn't know that happened. I just wanted to kind of know how The Making of Alien came about. And if you were a fan of the movie, did you have like a personal connection to Alien?
Well, all the books that I write about, I really like. And I happened to live through that period. So I got to see them at the movie theater when they came out. Then it was a different experience back then going to the movies. VHS cassette didn't exist, or were just beginning to exist in some cases. And so, you know, everybody went to the movies, and it was this great communal experience and much generally larger theaters than you have today. And 70 millimeter prints and things like that, which you can still see today, fortunately, in some great theaters. So, yeah, so I have a connection to them. And in this case, I think I wrote about it in the introduction. Steve Asbell, who's a production executive at Fox, he heard about the Planet of the Apes book I was writing already, and he asked to meet with me. I met with him and Steve Zerlin, who's another production executive at Fox, and Carol Roeder, who's the director of publishing. And basically, Steve Asbell has a long relationship with Ridley Scott. They did The Martian together and other movies. And he said, you know, Ridley Scott has all these great stories. You know, you should meet him and then write this book. And that's basically what happened.
There's a huge component of this book. It's a lot of it is dedicated to Ridley Scott's original storyboards and nearly a complete set of his storyboards for Alien. And they're just gorgeous. You would think, like, you know, something out of like Heavy Metal magazine or something. They're just so meticulously drawn and just beautiful. What did you think the first time that you saw this set of storyboards?
Well, I was basically really happy because I as soon as I saw them, I thought, and they were also high resolution. I thought, well, this is great. This is basically going to be the heart of the book, because as far as I know, there's never been a complete set published anywhere. Parts of them have been published. But so I made it clear to, in the, you know, the, whatever, the design brief, that was, you know, we had to do all of them. And then there's a few that aren't in there, but they're just repeats of ones that are in there. So pretty much the whole thing is in there. I don't think we left out a single one.
If you want to see the original storyboards from Ridley Scott on Alien, this book has them, and it's just fascinating to see how just detailed he was about everything. And you can really see, like, you know, it paid off for the movie. If you have good storyboards, the likelihood that your movie is going to at least be organized is a good one. So it's really cool to see his storyboards in your book.
Well, and you're right in that they paid off, because as the book tells, you know, the budget was around $4.2 million. When he went into this meeting with Alan Ladd and the Fox sort of triumvirate, Ladd, Gareth Wigan, and Jay Cantor. And after his presentation, they basically doubled the budget. And without that other $4 million, you know, it's a different movie. Because to some extent, you do get what you pay for. And Ridley Scott put, you know, all that money on the screen.
Yeah, and he sold it. He sold the idea of, because, you know, there were some people, I think Dan O'Bannon, you mentioned in the book, he wasn't exactly like on board right away with this bigger budget idea of Alien. But later he was.
I think he was surprised. I don't think they just didn't envision that. They were going to take it to Roger Corman. I think they were probably disappointed that Roger Corman just wouldn't finance it all. And when he didn't, you know, the whole story is in there, but basically it ended up through a friend of theirs going to Brandywine, and Brandywine took it to Fox. But it was very convoluted, and it could have easily died in turnaround if Ridley Scott hadn't been hired and galvanized everything. You're right in that his storyboards look like Heavy Metal, because that's, you know, another key component. Everybody, I actually had a subscription to Heavy Metal magazine, and I found it in a comic book store, and it blew my mind. Immediately signed up for it, because it was just this amazing magazine back in 19-whatever. I think he saw the French version. I don't think I saw it. Until, but it was basically, he's doing, you know, he's channeling Mobius and Druyer, I guess. And he just loved it. And it was Ivor Powell, I think, who showed him the Heavy Metal magazines. Ivor Powell was basically his assistant, you know, his associate producer. So it's just wonderful, you know, to get them all in the book.
Yeah, it's definitely so cool to see them. It really is. And a funny thing that I found out from your book was that Ridley Scott wasn't really, like, up on his horror movies. Like, he knew Alien was going to be like a horror sci-fi hybrid, but I don't think he was like confident in, you know, the horror realm of like what he had to portray. So I think he asked Dan O'Bannon and Ron Shusett to like make him a list of movies he absolutely needs to watch. And they made him watch Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Night of the Living Dead, Psycho, The Exorcist, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Can you kind of walk us through, you know, what his reaction was to this, and how did it affect the end result of Alien?
Well, it's a good question. He definitely thought of sci-fi and horror as kind of like maybe one notch above porno films.
Yeah.
as he was growing up, and then it's described in the book, and then 2001 changed things, and then Star Wars changed things, and the Star, you know, they both were radical changes to his thinking in the cinema industry. But yeah, he hadn't seen those, so they set up a bunch of screenings for him at Fox, and I don't know what his reaction was to each of them, but he's mentioned a few times that seeing Texas Chainsaw Massacre really had a big impact on him.
Mm.
And I think that's been written up, you know, it was such sort of unrelenting suspense and fear. I can't even watch that movie. I tried once. I got through it, but only barely. Yeah, I guess it must be big in Texas. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very big in Texas. But the great thing about Texas Chainsaw Massacre is, you know, I think people after the fact, after they watch it, they think it's so bloody and gory. But that's like really your mind filling in the gaps, because it actually isn't a very bloody movie at all. And you're just imagining what's happening to these people. And I think that's probably something really Scott, you know, latched on to, like, you know, the difference between what do you show and what do you make your mind think of.
Right. Well, also, I think if you show after the chest burster, you don't need to see a lot.
Oh, yeah.
The chest burst is pretty graphic, but... In fact, you're right. It's very quick, and you don't actually see it that much. But at the time, it was really, I mean, people were just, you know, leaping out of their seat. Nobody had ever seen anything like it. Texas Chainsaw Massacre gets a lot of press, but in fact, he said several times that the film that he really wanted to equal or surpass, if possible, was The Exorcist. Because The Exorcist was a much more skillfully made film.
Yes.
And also today, I think, holds up
absolutely
really, really well. And that was the film that it was really his gold standard when it came to a really good, suspensefully terrifying film.
I love in your book how you talk about the tale of the two face huggers. And I didn't know this, that Giger and designer Roger Dickens were both working on Facehuggers at the same time. Can you tell us
little
bit about this?
There was a lot of angst and worry about all these different aliens, you know, the facehugger, the chest burster, the adult alien, and they were running out of time. And Roger Dickens was hired to basically take some of the weight off of Giger's shoulders. And also, Giger was really supposed to be just a designer.
Right.
And then he sort of was brought on the production, and then Dickens was going to do the adult one, and then he didn't want to do the adult one, so then they brought Giger back. At one point, Giger was laid off, and then he was brought back. So it was not done in a streamlined way. And, you know, most movies aren't, because everything you're making on a movie is a prototype.
Right.
And but they really... Ridley Scott really wanted Dickens to be concentrating on the facehugger and the chest burster, but Giger couldn't let it go. And so he was kind of doing it in secret until he was ordered not to do it anymore and to concentrate only on the adult one.
I want to go back to something else that I found in the making of Alien that I thought was really cool. Dan O'Bannon and Ron Cobb sent Giger a kind of, and you have this reproduced in the book, an alien list of elements to be designed, which is really cool. It was like a step-by-step, you know, this is what you need to give us. And
right.
Giger sent back his transparencies, but they were held up in customs. Can you walk us through what happened there?
They had to go down to Los Angeles go down to the airport, and they had to go and explain to the customs officers what it was, because they were probably thought this is the some sort of horrible, I don't know what they thought it was.
Yeah.
Serial killers work.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious that they were like, you have to come here and get these because we don't really know what they are.
And then when Gordon Carroll, one of the producer who was kind of in charge that point, Saudi thought, this guy is a complete lunatic. And, you know, he didn't want Giger to have anything to do with the movie. And he really wouldn't have if Ridley Scott hadn't brought him aboard.
That's so crazy because, you know, we would have such a different movie if, you know, Giger wasn't involved. Like, I can't even imagine it, you know.
No. And then obviously Dan O'Bannon deserves all the credit in the world because he was the one who really kept plugging Giger, but Ridley Scott was the one who understood this is the guy who can help me not have a man in a rubber suit.
Right. You have so many behind the scenes photos in this book that are just incredible. I love the photos of Balaji Bodego as the alien and just the prototypes and all the continuity Polaroids that are in there are just fascinating. And of course, Ridley Scott's storyboards are just beautiful. They're just gorgeous. And all of the drafts of the scripts, which is so cool. I love that you kind of structure the book around the first draft and then the second draft and all of the rewrites that went through it. And just that whole process is just laid out for you to see from beginning to end. And you just did such a great job, JW. And thank you for giving us this amazing book, The Making of Alien. Can you tell people where they can find this book and find out more information about you?
Sure. Thank you for your kind words, first of all. Well, I have a website, jwrinsler.com, and then I'm on Twitter at jwrinsler. But you can contact me through the website or through Twitter.
Can people find The Making of Alien on Amazon?
I think everywhere books are sold. I mean, I hope.
Yeah. I got my copy from Amazon, and it was shipped in a day, and it is just an incredible book. It's like, I don't know how much it weighs. It's got to be 10 pounds or something. It is heavy and dense, but so meticulously and beautifully put together. And it is such a great insight into that time period when The Making of Alien was going on and a look at all of the players involved in this movie. And it's so cool. And I can't thank you enough for sharing all of that information with us alien nerds out there.
You're very, very welcome. I'm glad you like it.
I have confirmed that he's got an outer layer of protein polysaccharides. He has a funny habit of shedding his cells and replacing them with polarized silicon, which gives him a prolonged resistance to adverse environmental conditions. Is that enough?
That's funny. What does it mean?
Please don't do that. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's an interesting combination of elements, making him a tough little son of a bitch.
And you let him in.
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 79. We really appreciate you tuning in. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love it if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 79 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pasetta, executive producers Dallas Sonier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording design and mixing by Natasha Pasetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Wynerdy, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.